Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Leslie.
Hey, I'm Tessie.
Hey, Tessie. We started this podcast because we believe that it isn't necessarily the rich, the powerful, or the well-known who are making waves in this world. You guys, it's the moms. It's the women tending to their toddlers while launching international nonprofits or caring for their babies and creating art. It's the women who believe in both their mother self and their other self, and who are nourishing both as those around them stand back in admiration for the way they stride through life. We know this to be true. It's the hand that rocks the cradle that rules the world. Join the Mama Bear community, where we support and encourage women doing big and bold things with their lives, in addition to being great moms. And we dare you to harness the power of your Mama Bear to live a life of love and compassion. But today on the podcast, we are bringing you, I think, an extra special conversation. Mm-hmm. We are going to drop in on a conversation we had with a woman named Julie Lyles Carr. You'll hear about the many titles that she carries later on, but it's just, it's an incredible interview. It was initially supposed to be about her book, which is fantastic. It's called Raising an Original, Parenting Each Child According to Their Unique God-Given Temperament. But the conversation ends up being about almost everything. Everything.
I know. I couldn't help but think the whole time, like, this woman is a soul sister of ours. She could be a third host of this podcast. Didn't you get that feeling?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, we didn't know her at all before this interview, but I think our listeners could tell that immediately we didn't let this very small detail of strangerhood distract us from just diving deep into what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a parent, how we can do both to the best of our ability, really.
Oh, so true. So true. And, you know, as always, Tessie, we try to go through in the introductions and just kind of highlight a few things that our listeners might be especially interested in, or things that we really found to be motivating and inspirational. So let's just do that quickly before we get into the conversation with Julie. So the first thing that I want to point out to listeners is that Julie goes right into this fantastic idea that any investment that we make in ourselves, be it a college degree or a photography class or a workshop or whatever, it's never wasted. Mm-hmm. Even if you're elbow deep in, you know, dirty diapers and such, and you're not really using your college degree in the moment, investing in ourselves is never wasted. This was so refreshing to hear.
I know, I know. And that is exactly our goal of the podcast, right? Is to remind the mama bears out there that, like, you're a good investment, right? Mm. We also talked about her dad is a rocket scientist. A literal rocket scientist. So we talked about, you know, of course that's fascinating anyway, but just really how they cultivated a climate of curiosity for Julie when she was younger and how that's extended now to her family as well. I love that phrase, cultivating a climate mm-hmm. of curiosity. And I think that's such a great phrase to live by, both in ourselves and with our children.
Yes. Yes to that, for sure. Another thing to listen for is how Julie talks with us about engaging her mama bear to make a difference in the world. It was an interesting part of the conversation, I felt, because essentially, you know, Julie talks about how you can be paralyzed by the scope, you know, of yeah. all of the world's issues, or we can get really focused on fixing, kind of, instead of helping. And she really just sheds a lot of light and gives a great example of how we can help and how we can infuse joy and hope in places where it wasn't before.
Yeah. Yeah. She says, probably you won't solve the problem. You know, I mean, most problems are just too big for you, but you can help. And there's so much to be said about that. She also gave a few really good examples of just some of the ripples. We like to talk about the ripples that can be created when you kind of harness the power of your mama bear. And she talked about some of the ripples she's seen with her nonprofit, just how it's affecting that. You'll hear it. So I don't want to give it all away, but like the dance instructors They're creating tremendous ripples in their lives too. I just loved that.
Yeah, yeah, our listeners will too. And we talked a little bit about the fraught topic of youth sports, which honestly, Tessie, I was just checking today. It's one of our most listened to episodes. It's a topic. It strikes a chord with people. Yeah. And I thought Julie had some really great insight into it. And I'm just going to pull one quote because it's so good. She says, if your happiness is contingent on your kid's ability to perform, bad, bad news. Yes. She spends a lot of time talking about how we really can't tie up our identities with our kids or we'll never recover.
Never, never recover when they disappoint, right? Because they're going to, they're human. I also, she ends when we asked her about what she does for her other self. She ends with the idea that there's so much power in your kids seeing you emotionally reset. Because I think even as adults, we have this idea that when you're sad or angry, you can't pull yourself out of it. But the reality is you can. And it's a good thing to show your kids that just because you're sad and angry for a couple minutes doesn't mean it needs to ruin your day. Go in your room, take a few deep breaths, come out when you're feeling better. Love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So you guys, it was hard just to narrow down a few of our favorite snippets as we just did for the introduction. We're going to have her back on the show, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we didn't want our time with her to end. But for now, go listen to the conversation and then head to the website. You can find her book there. So if you want more of Julie, we do recommend picking up her book, Raising an Original. But for now, here's Julie. Julie Lyles Carr is a writer, photographer, pastor, the founder and director of a nonprofit called Legacy of Hope Austin, and she's also the wife to Michael and a mom to 8. Though Julie is here to talk about her new book, Raising an Original, we are excited just to learn more about the woman behind all of these titles. So, Julie, welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, we're so excited to discuss just a little bit about your life and the work that you do. But let's start with you telling us a bit about how you grew up. And maybe if you could focus specifically on how your upbringing shaped who you are and what you're doing with your life today.
Well, it's interesting because looking back, I realized I had a fairly unusual upbringing, though at the time when you're in the middle of it, you don't think of it that way. Mm-hmm. But my dad was literally a rocket scientist, and we followed, I know, right? Like, who says things like that? And we followed the progression of the shuttle program. That was particularly one of the systems that he was extremely engaged in. He had other rocket and missile systems that he was engaged in, but the shuttle was really the bulk of his work when I was a kid. So we grew up, and I had these southern parents, but I grew up for the most part in Southern California near a dry lake bed because that's where you could try to launch stuff and blow stuff up near Edwards Air Force Base. And so as I look back, I grew up in this bedroom community of all of these geniuses, really, or astronauts or test pilots or further astrophysicists and that kind of thing. And all my friends did too. So this was all very normal to us. Mm. And I think that kind of community now, looking back, I'm like, what a profound experience, because people who are in the rocketry industry are exceptionally creative, but it's all in this very pragmatic and project-driven way. So I think that probably had far more impact on me than I realized at the time, because it really is unusual. I realize that now, having grown up and been out of it, but education was a huge part of our lives. Making a difference was a huge part of our lives. Dreaming really big. You know, my dad grew up in rural Mississippi and ended up going on to help people go to space. So I'm sure all those factors played a big role. And then, of course, their inherent Southernism growing up outside of Los Angeles for us was really quite an interesting collision of a very genteel and old culture in the mash of all the new and glittery of being in Southern California.
Wow, that is really interesting. Yeah.
I feel like we could unpack that for hours, that alone. I mean, that's incredible.
We might want to engage a therapist too. If you do that. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just to have that kind of be the norm, because as you said, you know, your friends in that community were kind of growing up in the very same way. And it is. I think, you know, in retrospect, looking back, like that is not the everyday norm. And yet for you, it just seemed kind of normal.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, now that sort of the heyday of space exploration is somewhat over, right? You know, that romantic period is somewhat ended. I realize now that it's a season that probably won't be replicated in the same way as we move forward with some of our exploration in this country with, you know, what the future of NASA might look like, all of those things. It was a very specific point in history for sure.
Yeah. So obviously it influenced you a little bit too. You went on to get your Bachelor of Science in pre-med in psychology and also a Bachelor of Arts in English Literature. So we mentioned that because firstly, that's wow, like that's fantastic. But also because we would love to know how sort of this growing up around these really smart and creative people and then your college life where you were studying, you know, English as well as pre-med, how did these things and the things that you learned shape the Julie that sort of sits in the chair today?
Well, there was one other thing that I studied that really impacted the Julie that is today, and that was the way that I studied the way this guy named Michael Carr looked in 501 Levi's and was able to ultimately get him to look my direction and finally talk him into marrying me. And so Mike and I were, we were college sweethearts, and, you know, that relationship and moving forward was so profound because I, frankly, you know, was quite fascinated with the guy because he's truly the cutest thing you've ever seen. But he is a phenomenal encourager, and he was not put off or scared by the nerdy, you know, high value on brainiac kind of thing that I brought to the table that was a little bit odd in the day. And so I think that that ability to find that person who understood that and appreciated that in me and celebrated it was really profound. Now, in terms of what my actual degrees were, the funny part is, and I think for a lot of the mamas out there, some of us may be thinking, okay, that whole college thing I went through, like, now that I'm changing endless diapers and I can't even seem to figure out the biological component that would help clean out the sippy part of this sippy cup, like, what was all that for? Yeah, exactly. But it's really fascinating to me the way that our lives kind of weave back around on themselves. So there were many years that I would have told you that a lot of my education was just dormant, if not dust. But coming into a new season now where I'm really getting to utilize in a way that's really fun, the psych background that I've had, you know, you'll see that expressed in my new book, Raising an Original, but also the writing piece of it, which I so love, the creation process of that. It's been really sweet to see that come back around, particularly because of my parents' focus on education. It's been really cool to see that come to a fruition that I couldn't have imagined back then.
I love that you said that because I think that's really true. I think, you know, so many of our listeners come from this place of great education, frankly. I mean, a lot of us are really trained in the in many, many different things, and we're experts at things, and we're enthusiasts. And then, you know, if you decide to kind of give up your career in order to stay at home and raise your children, or if your career takes a back seat, or if you're just juggling so many things that you don't have kind of the time or wherewithal to dedicate to those things that you've studied, it does feel like it gets lost.
It can. And I think that it's so important to know, and this is going to sound kind of like, you know, an old sage from the mountain saying this, so I don't mean it in some kind of paternalistic way or patronizing way, but the longer I'm around the planet, the thing that I do love is it does seem to me, even when it's not exactly obvious in the moment, that any investment we make in ourselves, in the curation of who we are, in the development of who we are, is not lost. Those things are not lost. And it may take a while for us to be a push-up from ground zero of diapers and, you know, evil Legos that sneak out in the night and just cut holes in the bottom of your feet. But I think that it still is there. I think that that investment is there and does come back to us in a way that can be really, really sweet.
I agree. And I think, you know, what you're really saying, that your parents taught you and kind of cultivated in you, and then what your college experience, both meeting your husband who honored this part of you, and then how college has a way of just nurturing this as well. But this idea that learning new things and seeking the truth and all of that is important, whether the truth is which diaper is better or which bottle is better. You know, if you come from a background of just really seeking and learning, which you clearly did, then that has a way of, like you said, seeping into your life in the weirdest and most random ways.
Yeah, it does. And I think curiosity is such a powerful thing to always keep activated in our lives. Yes, stay curious about the best diapers. Stay curious about what really will clean those little plastic sippy things on those sippy cups, because that speaks well to our kids. We begin to cultivate an environment for them that's one built of curiosity. You know, having the documentaries around and actively reading and actively discussing fascinating things, it's an incredible gift to give our children.
Totally agree. And this may seem like a really weird pivot to our listeners, but I think that it's related, because I wanted to talk to you about your nonprofit. Since we did a little research on you, of course, and learn more about it, this had to have started from that place of curiosity. So can you tell us a bit about the origin story, really, of Legacy of Hope Austin?
Right. Many years ago, 2001, I was pregnant with my fifth child, and my fourth child seemed to be a bit delayed in her speech. Now, by a calendar, some people would think, well, she was only two. What do you mean she was, you know, what do you mean she was delayed in her speech? But I had other early talkers, and she was growing up in a very verbally rich environment. So when she was about two, I took her into the pediatrician, and I said, hey, I don't feel like I'm connecting language-wise with this kid. And my pediatrician at the time, whom I ended up firing, sort of patted me on the head and said, oh, you're just being a nervous mama, and you've got these other three that are very verbose, and they're doing the talking for her. So I let it ride. I let it ride for about 6 months. And at the six-month mark, one of my best friends had been to visit me around New Year's Eve, and she just looked at me and she said, Jewel, seriously, I mean, she's really not very communicative. And, you know, everybody needs a friend like that, right?
Yeah.
Somebody who will love you enough and gently enough to pull you aside and go, hey. So I took her back in and again sort of got the pat on the head from the pediatrician. And I think to placate me, she said, well, I tell you what, I'll go on and set you up to take her to a developmental specialist, but everything's fine. Ears are fine. Eyes are fine. Oh, and let's throw in an audiology booth test just to, you know, quell your fears. I said, okay. So it was also blasé that my husband Michael went on to work that morning and I took Macy myself to the audiology visit, and we sat in the booth, at which point I discovered she was not responding to the sounds that were being emitted through the system. And in that moment, learned that she had a significant severe hearing loss. And what then followed was months of throwing myself into what we were supposed to do next, and a burgeoning awareness of just how difficult things are for families who have children with identified special needs financially, support system, community, all the decisions you're having to make. I mean, immediately you're trying to just on-ramp and become an expert in something you may have no familiarity with. In Macy's case, we learned that most insurance companies do not pay for hearing aids. And just in case you haven't priced hearing aids lately, they're not cheap. So there were all kinds of things that we learned across the board, emotionally, financially, research-wise, different approaches, different philosophies, all kinds of things. And in that time frame, I said to my husband, somebody needs to make a change. Somebody needs to make a difference. I can't do it right now because I'm in the thick of trying to get decisions made for this child. But, you know, at some point, somebody needs to do something. And so that went for a while. We made some decisions for Macy. We started making some progress. We started building some community. And then we discovered, now years later, that we were pregnant with twins, babies number 7 and 8. And a year after those twins were born, we discovered that our baby number 7, our baby Mercy, had actually had a stroke at birth and was identified as cerebral palsy, left side hemiplegia. So once again, I launch into this world of co-pays and therapies and decisions and financials and on and on and on. And began to realize a little bit more, even through all the emotion of this doesn't seem fair and we punched this card. Isn't that a mature response? Mm. We already punched the special needs card.
Yeah.
But how are we going to? But I began to realize I was on assignment. And it had been a sense that I had initially, but just no time or bandwidth. And with Mercy in particular, I would sit in the waiting rooms as we would be at neurology appointments or prior to some of her therapies and different procedures. And I was just granted the grace to look around and really see some of the parents that were there and really begin to understand some of the needs. So when Macy was, I'm trying to remember how Macy was probably, 14, 15 years old, and when Mercy was about 3 years old, a friend of mine who had been observing my journey came to me and said, if there's anything you could do for our community, what would you do? And I said, oh, I tell you what I would do. I said, I would come alongside families with special needs, and I would provide things like dance class and performance opportunities so these kids can be celebrated and it can be a point of advocacy so that people can, yes, see the differences. Okay, we're wired to see differences. That's okay. But then get over it and celebrate and look at art in many different forms. I would provide horseback riding. I would provide a date night for families with children with special needs and their siblings, because we know that couples who have a child with special needs divorce at almost a 90% rate. So just these little moments of support, because in particular, I was aware of the fiduciary experience where you're paying for co-pays and all this kind of stuff. Things like dance class and date nights can get lost in the budget confines of the scene. So I tell my friend this, and I'm really impassioned. I'm sitting in Costco getting my tires changed. I'm on my cell phone having this conversation, and just thought it was sort of a one-off kind of a conversation. A couple months later, this person circled back to me and said, I had someone in mind who had some financials that they wanted to gift to a worthy cause. You can start your nonprofit. And
wow.
I was just blown away, absolutely blown away. So we kicked off in 2010, and we had three different branches we were offering at the time. And the one that has really ignited, the one that has become something that I couldn't have even imagined, is the branch we call To Dance, To Dream. And we're now at six campuses, five in the Austin metro area, one in Nashville, Tennessee.
Wow.
And through that program, we provide dance and performance experiences for individuals with special needs of all ages. It's all free for those families. Costumes, dance shoes, all of it. And what has become really powerful is we now have a little performance company, and that little company is now competing in what are considered neurotypical, cognitive typical dance competitions and bringing the house down. Because when you all of a sudden kick open the doors and say, this art form is for everyone, the most beautiful things happen. It's really been an exceptional experience. There's just a magic in it that's hard to describe, but you know it when you see it. And so that was the origin story of how all of that started. It really came out of a place. You know, sometimes you get handed something that the only thing you know what to say is, why? Why are we having this experience? And every now and then, you get handed back a really gorgeous moment that says, this doesn't answer all the whys, but it gives you a little bit of it. And so I've come to a place of peace that if I hadn't been awakened in a more specific way to this community, there are now a whole bunch of people that are getting celebrated and getting to perform and being able to advocate and tell their stories because of the experiences that we walked through. And that's a really profound thing to get to experience.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a beautiful story. And it really, I think, captures so much of your mama bear. That beautiful, fierce, kind of tender, yet so capable piece of yourself that really was activated along part of a journey, but mostly in the parking of Costco.
Right. Exactly. And I think for any of us, you know, that mama bear spirit is such a beautiful thing, because I hope that it does communicate that there's a tenderness there, but there's a fire there. You know, when you get handed things that are difficult to understand, we have an opportunity to either lean into what can feel being very victimized, or we can allow it to ignite something that really can go on to help other people and bring some context and some texture to the why.
Absolutely. So, Julie, what advice would you give someone out there who might kind of have something in mind but are hesitating to act on it?
I think you just said the key word, which is to act. Now, act can be making sure you're discussing it and you're telling your story and you're telling your story well. It may be a while before the resources catch up to you or the exact action plan takes place. But something that I have noticed, at least within the community that really activated me within seeing the special needs community, other places where I've seen, you know, I have dear friends who have done significant work in Africa. And I know, Leslie, are you the one who helps with the nonprofit in Africa? Is that right? You know, when you see those moments where there's something that you know, it just really catches hold of your heart, I think we all stand in that moment if we have an option. And one option is to go around proclaiming the unfairness of a situation. And that has an aspect to it. I mean, obviously, when we see people suffering, we see things that are challenging, we see things we don't understand. That's there. But sometimes we put all this energy into focusing on the unfairness of it instead of what can we do? What would really be a troubleshooting moment? And that advocacy piece, I think what's critical is it's not enough to just be a mouthpiece about the inequity. It's so critical to be a mouthpiece about what could be a solution. I think the other thing that's important to note, too, for anybody who's got that fire that's starting to brew and there's something they want to see happen, to some degree, I look back and I'm like, dance classes for kids with special needs? Like, how is that going to completely change somebody's world? Really? You know, like, it's dance. But I'm telling you, trust that those small steps, trust that that small offering, trust that that little place of generosity has so much more potential built into it than you can possibly imagine. Part of what's happened with To Dance to Dream that just blows us away is one of my daughters, my second daughter, is a professional dancer, and she's the one who directs that program. And through her connection, she began to engage. We have a buddy for every individual with special needs who's dancing. So she engaged this army of these different girls, these different guys who had a passion for dance, who had a passion for helping those with special needs. And those kids, junior high and high school kids, have gone on to major in special ed or in PT or in OT or, you know, in any number of these different things because it awakens them to what was their call in their lives. And so the story expands so much further than just a little dance class for a handful of kids. Yeah, I mean, it begins to expand out. And I think that is something that even if you think, well, gosh, all I'm going to have the capacity to do is put together a little care package for this or send books to this area of the community where literacy is an issue, you just have no idea what putting that kind of seed in the ground can do. And you really be excited about that.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point, especially for many of us, you know, who have like a lot of kids or they're young or, you know, we have so much going on. If you have that feeling of, you know, I can do a little something, you don't have to go to Africa to affect change in the world. You know, some of us get to, but you don't have to. And I just think that's such a great point that you make. And what I'm always so impressed by when people just kind of take that first small step and then just beautiful things happen, whether or not you see them blow up in front of you as something really huge, or if it's just something small that affects one person's life. It's an incredible thing when you really do engage that mama bear and act, take that step to act.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, and I think, you know, what you said is a really critical point. I think what paralyzes people sometimes is they see the scope of the problem. So you were saying, you know, really, what could dance do? Well, it actually does a lot. So they see the scope of the problem. What could I really do with my kid or the kids I see with special needs? Well, if you focus on the scope of any problem, whether that's clean water, education, whatever your deal is, right, you will be paralyzed. You can't possibly fix it all. But if you really kind of narrow your focus and just get to work, then you'll be so surprised. We call them ripples, just like you said, plant the seed. Like, you'll be so shocked to see where the ripples extend in your family, in your community, and then throughout the world. But you really got to stay focused on a small part and not be overwhelmed by the enormity of any issue.
Well, and you just said something so profound in this whole topic of looking at nonprofits, looking at being missional in our lives and helping others. I don't think these are problems that are ours to fix. I think they are opportunities for us to help. Because mm-hmm. the fix for some of this, there's not a fix, really. I mean, you and I can't go and fix the governmental issues in some of these African countries that are so oppressive. Mm-hmm. I can't fix what happens in terms of birth injury or a genetic situation. Mm-hmm. But I can help. And so I think that's such important language that you've designated there, because sometimes I think we can get caught in this place of feeling like somehow it's our responsibility to fix, and instead it's our responsibility to focus and to create awareness and to create advocacy and to create joy. Mm-hmm. I think in any of these situations, yes, there is absolutely sometimes just the base physical need that needs to be met with some of the situations that we encounter. But to go and infuse joy and to infuse hope there is sometimes the best fix of all. Because you know, sometimes you get a cure, but sometimes you don't. And so the bigger part of the story is, how do we continue forward? If there's really not a cure, but there is a way to reframe it. I really love that you bring up the designation between those areas.
Yeah, there's so much joy to be had, right? I mean, for the people that we work alongside, but also for ourselves too. I mean, that is a beautiful way that we can kind of nurture the part of ourselves that stretches beyond motherhood, and just by helping others and experiencing that joy that can come with community and with mission and purpose. It's a win all around.
Absolutely.
So, Julie, here you are. You're a mom of eight, a pastor, the executive director of a nonprofit, and then you decide to write a book. We had the opportunity to read the book ahead of its September 13th release date, and we both really appreciate the theme of raising an original. So when did you decide that this was an important topic to tackle?
It's funny how assumptive people are when you have a large family. And there is this huge assumption that we would find it easier, or there's a risk that we would raise this number of kids as clones of each other, or that we would put some kind of process in place that would just kind of be this cookie cutter, stamp them out. You know, here's the values, cha-chink, here's the foundation, cha-chink, here's what your college major is going to be, cha-chink, and here's how you're all going to dress, cha-chink. And it's been really fascinating to experience people come and have those kinds of responses. Now, have we absolutely hoped to inculcate what we hope to be a very life-giving and hopeful construct to our kids' lives, and borders that we think provide altruism, borders that we think provide integrity, morals that we think provide moral mission? Absolutely. But do we think that there's a huge field of grace there to play in terms of individuality? Absolutely. And one thing that I think we all find, any of us who have a number of children, is that whether you want to raise them as clones or not, they're probably not going to let you. So you have to lean into it, because they're all so different. And so part of my desire in this book was to tell people, look, your kids are designed to be originals. I mean, the odds that any of us are here because of that collision of that DNA at that moment in that month that came from those ancestors and that ancestors on that side and on and on, the odds that any of us are here are absolutely incredible. And to really celebrate those individualities within people can be such a powerful, powerful thing. And I am seeing, culturally, we see a lot of mama shame, right? Like it still kind of floors me that we see this as much as we do, but all you have to do to have a lot of fun is just to throw a question out there on social media, you know, what do you think of people homeschooling or public schooling or not doing vaccines or doing vaccines or nursing or bottle feeding or cough or, you know, this feels like all you have to do is throw that out there. And the amount of judgment that just comes crashing down on people's heads is absolutely unbelievable to me in a generation where as women we should be supporting and celebrating each other as moms. I mean, I'm like, really? We're back here. Okay.
Yeah.
And so part of it is this kind of a manifesto, if you will, if you let me just steal that from the Mama Bear manifesto, but as a manifesto to say, look, nobody's ever raised your kid before. And while there can be great wisdom and things to glean from people who've gone before and moms who've had a lot of experience, we don't know. I've never raised your kids, and you've never raised mine. We are in the moment developing this thing for each of these kids. And the better we understand the originals who've been placed in our home and in our keeping and in our care, the better we can feel confident, the better we can move forward in raising them to be exactly who they're supposed to be and feeling the freedom and the courage to do that.
Oh my gosh. Amen. I'm so glad you said it. I'm just so glad you said it. It is so hard being a mom in the social media climate because of exactly what you said, because sometimes the question is really innocent. You just want someone to tell you their experiences with anything, say it is homeschooling, but then you get all this fire back, right? And you just aren't expecting it. You're like, no, I just really wanted, I'm a curious person. I wanted honest, you know, reactions. And so sometimes it can be incredibly shocking. That's one of the reasons I connected with the idea of the book of this Raising an Original, because you're right, both in honoring your original kid and also honoring the original way you have to parent each of your kids. I just really loved that. But I want to get into the meat of the book a little bit and quote it directly here, if you don't mind. You say in the book, "We have become a culture of parents who strive to create what we call normal childhoods for our kids, believing if we can achieve that magical ideal, we'll be rewarded with sparkling, popular, shiny kids. Our recipe is simple. One part idyllic childhood equals one part well-balanced, productive adult. If we can just live in the right house, in the right neighborhood, and keep our kids clothed in the latest fashions and ensure they make every team or squad they try out for, and if we can get them into the right college, then surely normal, successful people will be the result. Oh, and they'll be good Christians too, you know, after a little normal teenage rebellion and all." I just felt like this is absolutely the bill of goods we are sold. So why do you think this is? What is happening in our culture to perpetuate this kind of lie?
I think we're a culture that loves recipes, low risk, and the short outcomes. And if I can distill my parenting down to a simple formula, and I think I can get guaranteed results, then I don't really have to deal, to some degree, with the messiness of life, the uneven borders of individualities. And we all know experientially this is not truth, right? Like, we know that. You know, we've seen people who did the right thing and went to the right Christian college and met the right Christian guy, and then he turned out to be horrid, you know, or we went to work for this company that was supposed to be so missional and so great, and then we discovered that it didn't all play out exactly the same way. We know there are those things that we perpetuate that don't give us what we want and don't necessarily come true, and yet I think in our parenting, it's one of the places we are the most vulnerable. It's one of the places our heart is most on our sleeves. And so it feels better to us. It's like a nice binky or a blankie to go, if I can just follow neighborhood, school district, good college, nice church, we're going to be fine. But we know, and we see over and over, and we see over and over in history and from spiritual models and on, some of the most exceptional people in the world with the highest degrees of character and integrity certainly did not have idyllic childhoods. I mean, an easy one to just, you know, low-hanging fruit to just pick off the vine, Abraham Lincoln. This was in no way an idyllic childhood. And what an exceptional human being. So it's odd to me that we sometimes want to tell our children, oh, you're a precious, precious snowflake, and we're going to just try to keep you in this. And you know, it's going to make you really special if you have no extraordinary experiences. You know, if you ever experience failure or challenge or anything, you never have to stand up for yourself, anything. And then we put these kids on the porch of the world, and we're stunned when they go through those first few years out on their own And they are ill-prepared for what the world really is because we've created such an anesthetized experience for them. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it has to do with how fragile and vulnerable we are, with how we love our kids, how we want to protect them. I think, too, that it makes life seem more manageable if we think there's some kind of formula or program or system we can put our kids through that will give us guaranteed results. But we also know there's a level of cognitive dissonance in trying to push that, right? We know that's really not how the world works.
Mm-hmm. So your book is kind of an answer to this question, but I want to go ahead and ask it anyway, Julie. Why is it important then that we kind of modify that story? Why do we need to change that message?
I think there's several components of it, but I think the first one has to do with a deeply held belief that I have and how I want to be perceived as an individual. It's so honoring to honor who someone truly is. I think it's a deep, heartfelt need of every individual to really be known. And when we are looking at a generation of kids into which we're trying to get cookie-cutter results and we're so heavily influenced by the opinions of others and what good mothering, quote-unquote, looks like and what kind of children should result as a process of good mothering, we often miss something that's just rare and beautiful right in front of us. The thing is, we don't get to write the script on these kids. When you take on the mantle of motherhood, you are implicitly throwing yourself into a place of saying, wow, I'm going to get to watch someone's story. I'm going to get to contribute to someone's story. There are levels of responsibility and curation that I do have. But overall, wow, I'm opening myself up. I'm opening up my life to another human being who has their own unique story to tell. And when we aren't intentional about really seeing our kids for who they are and what their destinies are and what their stories are, when we get it too enmeshed within our own expectations and our own identity, we're not honoring them. We're not honoring who they were created to be. We're parenting by agenda. Mm-hmm. And I think that we all just kind of need to grow up a little bit. You know, if we got stuff we got to sort out in our own identity, great, go do that. But to not put that kind of responsibility on our kids, that we're trying to sort out our own identity through their lives, maybe what we didn't get to do or we dreamed of, that's not their story. Mm-hmm. And so in the way that I would want somebody to honor me and the way I want to honor other individuals, it really sort of comes back to the golden rule, and I say it without being trite, do unto others as you would have done unto you. If you want to be known and seen for your story, for all of the beautiful intricacies and facets of your life, then we have to extend it and we have to model that to our kids, that they matter for exactly who they are. Because that's when people really experience love, right? When mm-hmm. you really know me and you know what makes me tick and you love me. If you want to love your kids well, love them. Love their story. Don't be so in love with your own agenda that you miss what's right in front of you.
I really like what you're saying. And I think in some ways, you know, parenting is really hard, right? We can all agree that parenting, it's a tough task and it's a sacred and important task. But I almost feel like what you're saying about raising our children, you know, at that, as the people that they are, their soul level, that we can only understand when we stop and look them in the eye and listen to them, it almost lets us off the hook for some of those other things, for being able to live in the right neighborhood and get into the right schools and wear the right clothes and help them get on the right team. I mean, reading your words and hearing you speak make me almost feel, it almost gives me the confidence as a mom to think, you know what, I've got what it takes. It's in me. It's not something I need to go purchase or need to work hard to get in kind of that, the ways of society, I guess. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And it's one thing that I really hear over and over, and I want to keep speaking over women over and over. You know more than you think you do. You mm-hmm. really do. And you were given your children for a very specific reason. I believe that deeply. I don't know all the faith walk of everyone who might be listening, but I believe strongly that we receive assignments in our lives, and we receive assignments from a creator who has a very specific story that he's telling. And so I just love seeing mamas and their kids, however those children come to them, through birth, through adoption, through fostering, whatever that situation is. It's remarkable to me to see the assignments of families, the way that things are woven in. And in that moment, I do think people are well equipped. We just question ourselves. You know, we maybe had an upbringing that wasn't a great modeling for it, or we've got a really persuasive neighbor who seems to really have it together, and she does it 180 degrees from how we would do it. Mm-hmm. But I do think that we know more than we think we do. I think we're doing better than we think we are. And to me, that's really grabbing onto that message of the mama bear heart, right? Like, you have a ferocity and a fire for your kids that right now we generally express as an advocacy for our kids, but there's also part of it that is a deep knowing.
Yes.
And to really tap into that and get permission to say, no, wait a minute, I know my kid. Now, this is not a cry to let your kid be, you know, crazy and disrespectful and selfish and, yes, he's a biter. That's just who he is. He was designed to be an original biter. Well, no, that's not what I'm talking about. Your originality does not get to, you know, crash over into somebody else's rights. Your originality does not get to bump into the borders of somebody else's safety. No. But I do think that I think even those babies that we've carried in the womb, I think we get glimpses of who they are before they're ever born. One of my best friends adopted a little boy from Ethiopia, and I'm telling you, that first picture we had of him, which I still can cry over every time I look at it, but we got glimpses of who he is, and absolutely who he turned out to be when he arrived home to us. You know, I think there's just a supernatural knowledge we're given if we know how to tap into it, that our Creator graciously gives us, and that if we're willing to look for it, there are clues, there are ways that we can know, and we can gain that confidence that we do know more than we think we do. We're doing way better than we think we are.
We do, and we are.
You're right. I loved, you know, it's not really on the flip side. I think one of the reasons that we do get so confused and overwhelmed by what everybody else is doing and assume that we're lesser than is because we actually forget what we ourselves bring to the table, like the originality of us as moms. And you actually have a chapter titled, "And It's Not About You." And you talk about how we almost become, when we're so focused on being a mom, we can become really one-dimensional. And this is actually, this is one of the reasons we started the podcast, to remind our listeners that we are more than mom, you know, and to encourage them and inspire them to harness that part of themselves that's just uniquely them and bring that to their mothering. Because in the end, that's what makes you a good mom, is you just show up who you are, whoever God made you, if you feel like God made you or whatever, just whoever you are. When you show up to your kids like that, guess what? It encourages them to show up just how they are too. And I really liked that you dedicated a chapter to that.
I think it's critical that we give ourselves permissions to be the original we are. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes, depending on our upbringing, we may have had a situation where we felt deep to our soul who we were, a sense of identity, but it didn't match the expectations of who our parents were or what our society's expectations were at that time. And so for some of us, we're going to need a return. We're going to need to recognize the original we were created to be and to be given permission to be that. Mm-hmm. I said something recently to a friend of mine. I said, you know, you do know that it's not wrong to be introverted, right? And she looked at me and her eyes just filled, and she followed up again later and said, that is the first time I've really felt that, because she and her husband are in a business where being extroverted is highly valued. And so she felt less than because she's more introverted. And to get this permission all of a sudden to be exactly who she is, who she was created to be, in a way that's very profound, because you talk about somebody who's an amazing listener and super, what, like all these beautiful things that come with her more introverted nature. To understand that's a value. It's not a deficit. Mm. Some of us need that permission to be those originals so that then we can raise originals because our kids do model off of the message that we give them, don't they?
You know, I hadn't thought about this angle to that whole theme, is just that you say, you know, when we become just so-and-so's mom, that we actually put the weight of the world onto our child's shoulders because we're putting all of our identity on them. And I never I guess that hadn't really occurred to me. So just tell me when you realized that, or how do we, how'd you realize that? How do we combat that?
I think part of it, and okay, forgive me ahead of time, Southerners, but if you're really a Southerner, you know what I'm talking about. You know, my mom and I, and my mom's great, but she was raised that people's opinions really, really mattered. And she grew up in a small Southern town, and look, we get this no matter where we live, right? I mean, we all within our subculture have people watching what we're doing and commenting on what we're doing. So this is not endemic just to the South, but in terms of a little microcosm, in terms of a little Mayberry microcosm, you know, she grew up that way. And she and I would wrestle through some of my years because she very much felt that I was a reflection of her. So she's got this beautiful Southern upbringing, and we're now trying to translate that to a suburb outside of Los Angeles in the 80s. I mean, this was a real schism there to some degree. Mm-hmm. And she and I were able to really process and talk through that, you know, to some degree, when you're sending a kid out there as a representative of you, and yet you don't have, you know, that kid is not you. There's a certain level of feeling that can be good. You know, my dad always said, we are Lyles. Lyles always do this. Lyles tell the truth. Lyles help other people. There was a sense of identity that was very, very good in that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a sense, and if you're putting on your kids that your happiness is contingent on their ability to perform, the pressure of that is exceptional. And I have seen people crash land. I've seen kids crash land over and over because maybe dad wasn't a great athlete, but he's determined that son will be a great athlete. And so it's not just the son living his story and his athletic pursuits. He's also carrying dad's identities. And so when that touchdown doesn't happen, when that field goal gets missed, it's not just that the kid's going, man, I messed up. I wanted to do better. It's, oh man, I've now failed this person who put such identity in me. My kids are in the dance world. And, you know, all of my kids have danced, and they've all done some competitive dancing and on. There are mamas, bless their heart, that just want to snuggle them up to myself and say, why don't you have a good cry and go let your kid dance? Okay, let's just like, it's one thing to love what your kids do and celebrate and support your kids. It's another thing to feel like they are sort of your hologram up on stage doing what you can't do anymore. And that's a dangerous place. I just see kids crumble under the pressure. I see kids who are talented exit out of pursuits that they're great at because they can't take the pressure anymore of the parents on top of it. And without calling names, there's a book that came out a few years ago that was very much about pushing certain pursuits on your kids, regardless of how your kids are wired. And some of the fallout from some of that philosophy of parenting is pretty startling to really look at when we have too much of our self-worth wrapped into how those kids do. One of my very dear friends has a son who's made a lot of bad choices, and she's a great mom, and she's got a kid who just, he's gone rogue. And she has talked about that one of the things that was so difficult was disentangling her identity from his choices so that she could still stand and be as whole as she could be. And, you know, we can't predict where all of our kids are going to go or what they're going to do. And we got to be okay with that and not get so enmeshed in it that if they have a season that they go prodigal, that somehow we can't recover. And to watch her walk through this walk with him, to watch the kind of grace she's been able to extend, to watch the maturity in which she's allowed him to be him and make his mistakes, but she's solid in her faith and in who she is, has been a very beautiful thing to be able to witness.
I mean, we're recording actually in a couple days a podcast on youth sports, and I think, and just how crazy parents can become. And I think you said it right there, that it's so much of the craziness is because the parents have enmeshed their identity into their kid's identity. And we've all been there, right? At like a soccer game, and there's a little kid making a beautiful piece of art with the dandelions, and the dad and mom are like, pick up the ball, get the ball, you know? And this little kid's like, but do you see my dandelion creation? This is amazing. I'm creating something over here, right? And it's so hard to separate from that because if you had a biological kid, you know, you've pictured this for 9 months, just who's it going to look like, yada, yada. And then they come out and they're uniquely them and you're just kind of baffled. And I think that's one of the reasons I appreciated you have this four style personality traits assessment tool in your book. And I think to help navigate that, right? So what made you decide to include this in your book? And what do you hope this tool does for the reader?
With my training, with my background in psych, it had been just sort of a common part of my vernacular to experience my kids through a certain level of understanding different personality styles, different modalities, different ways that we can sort of identify how people operate, what makes them tick. What I realized over time is that if you haven't had the training on that, or you haven't encountered some of those assessments, some of those ways of understanding people, of understanding a little bit of how the human heart ticks, then your noticer might not be activated. And the thing I don't want the assessment to do for people within the book is I don't want people to take it and then forever categorize their kid as, okay, well, they're a this, and that means that, da 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 da. The purpose of this assessment is to awaken your noticer so that you can navigate and understand better the originals in your house. So a for example would be this. There's a personality style that I call the influencer. And understand, anyone who's familiar with the DISC assessment, this is based off of that. It's reconstructed in a way that is meant to be far more accessible to parents and children. That it's, you know, the different examples and the different verbiage is very intentional so that it makes a lot more sense and it seems more applicable to your kids and to you. But for example, there's a personality style that I have, under the typical DISC goes by a different name. Under this book goes by the Inspirer. And the reason that it goes by the Inspirer is this is a personality that just is very attractional to people. People just enjoy this person. They usually are very funny. And they're usually not terribly detail-oriented, but relationships are so important to them. Maybe you've got one of these living in your house. Now, let's say you're what I would call a curator. The curator is a personality style that puts their spices in alphabetic order, which is noble and exotic to me. So let's say you're a curator and you really like things that are organized and you like a spreadsheet and you like things to be very sequential and it means a lot to you. It's a high value for you. Well, if the Lord drops an Inspirer into your lap, and that Inspirer's room is a disaster all the time. As a curator, you could see that as a real failing for that influencer kid. Really what it is a natural expression of that influencer personality because they would far rather be with people than putting their Legos in color-coded bins. Now, does it mean that your Inspirer has no responsibility to learn good life skill, to learn to somewhat pick up after themselves? Of course not, because somebody who's a total disaster all the time, there's a level of unintentional selfishness, right? There's somebody who's got to follow up behind. But it doesn't mean that you've done something wrong, that your kid doesn't organize and clean the way that you do. You just have different personalities. It just activates the noticer in you. And once that is activated in you, then you can be a lot more strategic. So for example, in this example of the influencer versus the curator, if you really want that influencer to clean and to get that room picked up, then make it relational. Make it a game. Make it something fun because that influencer is going to really respond to that. And you as the curator, you're not going to be on the edge of sanity to deal with that influencer. So the purpose behind it being there are things that we think are failings that sometimes are just preferences and they're just differences in personalities. The two kids who will challenge you the most in your family are the kid who's exactly opposite of you and the kid who is very much like you.
Preach!
So I think that knowing ahead of time, okay, that one's wired like I am and that one is wired way different, that can really, really help as you navigate your relationship with those kids and their relationships with each other. Because now you've also got the interplay of the personalities between siblings going on as well, which can be quite a fascinating mosaic.
Absolutely. I grew up an only child, and now I have three fascinating children, and I'm just constantly amazed by those kind of inner dynamics of the way siblings grow up with one another. So, but I like how you have included this kind of personality assessment tool. And I like it because it not only kind of makes me stop and really think about the people in my house, you know, and really just take a moment and decide like, okay, what's up with this kid today? Like at his core, who is this one, you know? But then also, as we were saying earlier, we like recipes. We like to know kind of what to do with that. And so it's such a great blend, you know, to have this sort of, okay, you need to pause and you need to think, but then also here's something really practical. Here's this tool that you can use. So I think that's fantastic. I think we would love to know, I know our listeners would love to know how you nurture your other self. We think that this is really important. We know that you think that this is important as well. And we recognize that so often we're really, really good at nurturing that mother self, the one who makes 64 sandwiches a week, probably more in your case. It does so much laundry. But Julie, what is it that you do that's just for you?
I think one thing that I really want mamas to hear and hear well, it is about nurturing yourself. So hear that, yes. It's also so good for your kids. This is one of these things that really gives you a double portion, okay? Because what I've learned is, yes, motherhood is sacrificial, and there are areas that we've got to deny self and take on the needs of these kids. But it is so, my kids will tell you, and I didn't know this till I had the chance for my kids and I to talk about this, because I have kids now who are young adults, and they have loved, in their experience, seeing that I had things that I did and other things that I did. That, for them, was really, really big. And I know we constantly fight the message of how much is too much out of the home, in the home. And I know people who sort of, parenting's sort of just a blip on their radar, and their lives don't seem to change very much. And their kids, you know, to some degree can be rather neglected as they continue to pursue their lives. But mamas, hear me. It's so great for your kids to know that you have things outside of them. It's really good for them to know. So for myself, I have a couple of things. I think, Leslie, you were the one who was distinguishing in a previous podcast that y'all had that you're not a jogger, you're a runner, right?
That's right.
I love that. I'm a runner, and I do try to take and make time for real investment in working out. I think it's really important for me. It's part of how, let me tell you, raising eight kids, like, you got to be in some good shape. And the times that I have really... Sometimes I really struggle to describe, let that get away from me, and I haven't made that time investment. And then the lesson I want my kids to have, too, is what it means to walk, supporting your physical health, what that means. So the running's big, the working out's big. That's a time where I can really process and just have some time to really think. I'm also a big bathtub person. I know. I mean, it's just kind of cliche, but I am. I'm like, okay, I want my bathtub, and I want bubbles. And
me, too. I hear you.
Yeah, that's a really important moment. I'm a big, big reader. That's a very renewing facet of things for me. I really enjoy that. And another thing that's interesting for me is I always say I'm an introvert masquerading as an extrovert. Now, there's a new phrase out there called ambivert, but I love people. I really do. I love personalities. I love interacting with people. I love to speak. I love all of that. But where I get renewed is in the retreat. And there are times I really need to retreat. When you're in a household that's supporting 10 people, and two of my kids have now moved out, but when we were at like maximum human capacity per square foot, even to just retreat for a little bit, whether that was off-site or in the house, but just say to the kids, I'm going to go be quiet for 30 minutes. I just need to go be quiet. I at first felt very guilty about that. And sometimes that meant that the kitchen didn't get cleaned. Sometimes it meant that maybe we turned a t-shirt inside out and wore it again, whatever. But that 30 minutes became really critical. I decided that I would rather have my kids essentially grow up in a climate of calm and fun with a high tolerance for chaos than have them always in completely customized clean clothing. And once I gave myself permission that we were just going to lean into the chaos, and if I needed some quiet, I was going to go do that, life greened up a whole lot. So those are all kind of cliche. There's nothing really exotic there, but it's the running, the reading, the bathing, the quiet. That's
love it. Love it.
I always say, I think it's so important for people to realize this. We aren't saying you need to go spend $100 on a shopping spree. You know, I mean, I think you're right that like they can be really simple things. And how profound is it for your kids to witness you finding such pleasure in simple things? And then also, I did this just earlier today. I could feel myself getting really frustrated with my children. God bless them. And I said, you guys, give me five without any questions and without any commentary, and I will be so much better for it. So just give me five. And I went in my room, nobody bothered me, and I came out and was able to find joy again. And so, and having them witness that, I think is really good. I think it's good because I do it all the time, so I hope it's good. And I feel really validated hearing you agree.
I have a phrase that I use often, and I say, you know, go mama yourself. I mean, if you've got a toddler who is just on the edge, you know, crying and whining and wringing their hands and everything's an upset, what do you do with that toddler? All right, we're gonna have a little time out, a little reset. Little, you know, go lay down for a little bit. Well, why on earth would we not do that for ourselves? And so to be intentional to mama ourselves, I think is really important, because we've got the wisdom there. We know we need a little breather. We just don't often take it, or we take it in ways that don't support being able to walk back out with joy. You know, we pound down the bag of candy, or we slam one more Diet Coke. You know, we know that's not going to be the best option. And sometimes sometimes it's just survival, right?
Whatever
it takes.
Yeah.
But when we can be intentional, you know, to mama ourselves, just like we would one of our kids if we saw him getting close to the edge. Because the important message that you're teaching there is exactly what you touched on. I want my kids to know that they can reset. I don't want my kids to think that once they start down an emotional train track, that it has to go all the way to collision. I want them to know that they can do a reset. And just like when our computers act up and then we realize, how long has it been since I restarted this computer?
Yeah.
You know, I think we need that. I think our brains, I think our minds, I think our hearts, I think our bodies need a restart every now and then. And it's just amazing what will kind of slough off if we're willing to do that.
Amen. Julie.
Yes.
This has been such a great conversation, and I'm sure that our Mom and Bear listeners want to hear more. So tell us where we can find you on social media, on the internet, on all of the places. Where are you?
All of the things. So you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at Julie Lyles Carr, which is JulieLyles Carr. And I also have a blog website at www.julielylescarr.com. So I would love to interact with Mama Bear listeners, hear your heart, hear what's going on in your lives. So please come find me.
Mama Bears, we will, of course, link to everything she just mentioned in our show notes on our website. So make sure you check that there. And we're also going to link to Amazon, where you can buy Julie's new book, Raising an Original, Parenting Each Child According to Their Unique God-Given Temperament. It's so good, you guys. We will link to it both in the show notes, and then we'll put a special link to it on Facebook as well so that it's easily accessible. But Julie, thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Can't thank y'all enough for having me. It's just been such a delight to have this conversation with y'all. Thanks so much. Well, you guys are awesome. I so appreciate what you're doing, and just onward and upward. Just so exciting to see how women can be connected and empower each other through all of this gorgeous medium we have through social media and podcasting. It's so exciting. I'm really thrilled to see where you guys go from here. So congratulations for such an awesome show, such an awesome vision. I'm just really
thrilled. Wow, thank you.
Thanks, and congrats on your book.
Mama Bears, today we dare you to both raise and be an original. After our conversation with Julie, it became incredibly clear that in order to raise an original, we have to be one ourselves. This means that we have to figure out what makes us come alive outside of motherhood. When we wrap our identities around our kids, it suffocates them and puts so much pressure on them to perform. Today, we just dare you not to do that. And it sounds easy, but it's hard. It is so, so hard. And there will be days that we absolutely fail at this. But like everything else we dare you to do on this podcast, it will take work. And practice will make permanence. So understand that your kids will succeed beyond your wildest dreams and they will stumble beyond your wildest dreams. And none of that should be part of your identity. We borrow our babes for such a short amount of time, so it is essential to remember who we are outside of that. You are worth knowing, not because your kid gets straight A's or is the star of the football team, but because you have a story that is uniquely you. Build your story so that you can easily understand how your kids are doing the same. We are uniquely and wonderfully made, and so are our kids. Let's honor that in each other and see what kind of love blooms from the recognition.
So good. Such a great conversation. Such a great dare. Mama Bears, we'd love to know what you think. What did you like about Julie's episode? What did you learn from her? Hit us up on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. And you can find us, as we've said, on our website, www.mamabeardarespodcast.com. There you will find a link to Julie's book and the show notes from her episode, as well as all of the others.
You guys, remember, we are in the last few weeks before Leslie's book launch, so we are still offering a bundle of Leslie's book, Mama Bear's Manifesto, so there will also be a link to that in the show notes. When you leave a review on iTunes, you get entered immediately. Immediately upon entering your review, then you could possibly win this bundle. So make sure you do that. It helps our listeners, especially anytime I listen to another podcast and I leave it like, whoo, that just filled me up. I go leave a review. You know why? Because it helps somebody else have that same feeling. So please do that for us. It helps so very much.
All right, Mama Bears, thanks for tuning in.
See you Wednesday.